Drift is free to you thanks to our friends at Sierra Sil. Why try these Canadian-made all-natural supplements? Because with a money-back guarantee, you'll notice a difference in your joint pain. You have everything to gain. Learn more at sierrasil.com and use the code DRIFT to get 10% off. Well, hello, I'm Erin, and welcome to Drift. Tonight, the Sea Fairies, stories of a sailor and a young girl who venture under the water's surface to meet some beautiful guides. First, I want to thank Envy Pillow, a Canadian company built on integrity that first gained national attention when its founders, two RNs, went on TV's Dragon's Den and wowed them. But they decided to go it on their own. Now, if you go to envypillow.com, you'll see an amazing array of quality and antimicrobial products that they offer. Use the code DRIFT to earn 10% off anything you choose. Do it in the morning. That's envypillow.com. And sleep with the best. Let's take a few moments to get you relaxed. Take a deep breath in and out. And just concentrate on that breath. Feel it on the inhale and on the exhale. Letting all of your cares and your tension, your thoughts and your worries just go. Feel the sensation of heaviness in your feet, your calves, your thighs, your backside. Release the hold of your hips, your belly, your shoulders, arms, and your neck. Let it just go and rest your head heavily on your pillow. Now, one more breath in, big and deep. And exhale now. And as you do, think these words. I am safe. I am loved. I am at peace. And if you're ready, let's drift. Now, the first few chapters of Sea Fairies by Wizard of Oz author L. Frank Baum, written in 1911. How fortunate that good stories, like mermaids, never age. Here we go.
Nobody ever saw a mermaid and lived to tell the tale, said Cap'n Bill solemnly.
Why not? Asked Trot, looking earnestly up into the old sailor's face. They were seated on a bench built around a giant acacia tree that grew just at the edge of the bluff. Below them rolled the blue waves of the great Pacific. A little way behind them was the cottage painted white and surrounded by huge eucalyptus and pepper trees. Still farther behind that, a quarter of a mile distant but built upon a bend of the coast, was the village overlooking a pretty bay. Cap'n Bill and Trot came often to this tree to sit and watch the ocean below them. The sailor man had one real leg and one hickory leg, and he often said the wooden one was the best of the two. Once Cap'n Bill had commanded and owned a trading schooner that plied along the coast, and in those days Trot's father had been the captain's mate. But ever since Cap'n Bill's accident, when he lost his leg, Charlie Griffiths had been the captain of the little schooner, while his old master lived peacefully with the Griffiths family. This was about the time Trot was born, and the old sailor became very fond of the baby girl. Her real name was Mary, but when she grew up big enough to walk, she took so many busy little steps every day that both her mother and Cap'n Bill nicknamed her Trot. It was the old sailor who taught the child to love the sea almost as much as he and her father did, and these two, who represented the beginning and the end of life, became firm friends and constant companions.
Why hasn't anybody seen a mermaid and lived? Asked Trot again. 'Cause mermaids is fairies, and ain't meant to be seen by us mortal folk.
But if anyone happens to see 'em, what then, Captain?
Then, he answered slowly, wagging his head, the mermaids give 'em a smile and a wink, and they dives into the water and gets drowned.
Suppose they know how to swim, Cap'n Bill?
That don't make any difference, Trot. The mermaids live deep down, and the poor mortals never come up again.
The little girl was thoughtful for a moment. But why do folks dive in the water when the mermaids smile and wink?
Mermaids is the most beautifulest creatures in the world. They's got a lovely lady's form down to the waist, and then the other half of 'em's a fish, with green and purple and pink scales all adown it.
Have they got arms?
Course, Trot, arms like any other lady, and pretty faces that smile and look mighty sweet and fetchin'. When they comes up atop the waves, they sing songs that go right to your heart. If anybody's unlucky enough to be round just then, the beauty of them mermaids and their sweet songs charm 'em like magic, so they plunge into the waves to get to the mermaids. But the mermaids haven't any hearts, so they laughs when the poor people drown and don't care a fig. That's why I says that nobody ever saw a mermaid and lived to tell the tale.
Then how do you know, Cap'n Bill?
Asked the little girl, looking up into his face with big round eyes.
Somebody must have lived. Other fairies have been seen by mortals. Why not mermaids?
Perhaps they have. But I'm telling you as it was told to me. But I've never stopped to inquire into the matter.
Perhaps, suggested Trot softly, someone found a photograph of one of them.
That might have been, Trot. That might have been.
A nice man was Cap'n Bill, and Trot knew he always liked to explain everything so she could understand it. The aged sailor was not a very tall man. Some might have called him chubby. He wore a blue sailor shirt, and his blue trousers were very wide at the bottom. His rough pea jacket came down to his waistline. In its big pockets he kept a wonderful jackknife, and his pipe and tobacco, and many bits of string, and matches and keys and other things. Whenever Cap'n Bill thrust a chubby hand into one of his pockets, Trot watched him with breathless interest, for she never knew what he was going to pull out. The old sailor's face was brown as a berry, with a fringe of hair around the back of his head and a fringe of whisker around the edge of his face. His eyes were light blue and kind. His nose was big and broad, and his few teeth were not strong enough to crack nuts. Trot liked Cap'n Bill and had a great deal of confidence in his wisdom and a great admiration for his ability to make toys with that jackknife of his. In the village were many boys and girls of her own age, but she never had as much fun playing with them as she had wandering by the sea, accompanied by the old sailor and listening to his fascinating stories. Cap'n Bill had been everywhere in the world almost on his many voyages. He had been wrecked on desert islands like Robinson Crusoe and had a host of other exciting adventures. So he was a delightful comrade for the little girl, and whatever Cap'n Bill knew, Trot was sure to know in time. How do the mermaids live? Are they in caves or just in the water like fishes, or how?
Can't say, Trot. I've asked divers about that, but none of 'em ever run across a mermaid's nest yet, as I've heard of.
If they're fairies, their homes must be very pretty.
Maybe so, Trot, but they're sure to be damp, you know.
I'd like to see a mermaid, Cap'n Bill, and live to tell the tale.
If they're beautiful and laughing and sweet, there can't be much harm in them, I'm sure.
Mermaids is mermaids, remarked Cap'n Bill in his most solemn voice. It wouldn't do us any good to mix with them, Trot.
Mary, come in to supper.
The next morning, the little girl and Cap'n Bill started out toward the bluff. The air was soft and warm, and the sun turned the edges of the waves into sparkling diamonds. Across the bay, the last of the fisher boats was speeding away to sea, for this was an ideal day. The pair stood on the bluff and watched all this with interest. Here was their world. It isn't a bit rough this morning. Let's have a boat ride, Cap'n Bill.
Suits me, declared the sailor.
So they found the winding path that led down the face of the cliff to the narrow beach below, and cautiously began the descent. Trot never minded the steep path or loose rocks at all, but Cap'n Bill had to be careful not to slip and take a tumble. They reached the sands and walked to a spot just beneath the big acacia tree, where hung suspended Trot's rowboat. About as high up as Cap'n Bill could reach was an iron ring, securely fastened to the cliff, and to this ring was tied a rope. The old sailor unfastened the knot and began paying out the rope, and the rowboat glided slowly downward to the beach. When it reached the sands, the sailor unhooked the ropes and pushed the boat to the water's edge. It was a pretty little craft, light and strong, and Cap'n Bill knew how to sail it, or row it, depending what Trot wanted. Today they decided to row, so the girl climbed into the bow, and her companion pushed off the little boat as he climbed aboard. Then he seized the oars and began gently paddling. "Whither away, Commodore Trot?" he asked gaily.
"I don't care, Captain. It's just fun enough to be on the water."
So he rowed around to where the great caves were, and they soon started to feel the heat of the sun.
"That's Dead Man's Cave, 'cause a skellington was found there," observed Trot as they passed a dark, yawning mouth in the cliff. "And here's Smuggler's Cave, 'cause the smugglers used to hide things in it."
She knew all the caves well, and so did Cap'n Bill. Many of them opened just at the water's edge, and it was possible to row their boat far into the dusky depths.
"And here's Giant's Cave," she continued as they slowly moved along the coast. "Captain, do you suppose there were ever any giants in there?"
"'Pears there must have been, Trot, or they wouldn't have named it that," he replied, pausing to wipe his bald head with the red handkerchief while the oars dragged in the water.
"We've never been into that cave, Cap'n," she remarked, looking at the small hole in the cliff, an archway through which the water flowed. "Let's go in."
"Your father was in there once," remarked Cap'n Bill, "and he says it's the biggest cave on the coast. But low down, it's full of water, and the water's deep down to the very bottom of the ocean. But the rock roof is liable to bump your head at high tide."
"It's low tide now. And how could any giant live there if the roof is so low down? So let's go in. I'd like to explore it."
"All right," replied the sailor. "It'll be cooler in there than out here in the sun. We won't go very far, for when the tide turns, we mightn't get out again."
He picked up the oars and rowed slowly toward the cave. The black archway that marked its entrance seemed hardly big enough to admit the boat at first, but as they drew nearer, the opening became bigger. The sea was very calm here, shielded from the breeze. Just beyond the opening, the cave was higher. and as the boat floated into the dim interior, they found themselves on quite an extensive branch of the sea. For a time, neither of them spoke, and only the soft lapping of the water against the sides of the boat was heard. A beautiful sight met the eyes of the two adventurers and held them dumb with wonder and delight. It was not dark in this vast cave, yet the light seemed to come from underneath the water, which all around them glowed with an exquisite sapphire color. Where the little waves crept up to the sides of the rocks, they shone like bright jewels, and every drop of spray seemed a gem fit to deck a queen. Trot leaned her chin on her hands and her elbows on her lap and gazed at this charming sight with enjoyment. Cap'n Bill drew in the oars and let the boat drift while he also sat silently admiring the scene. Slowly the little craft crept farther and farther into the dim interior of the vast cavern, while its two passengers feasted their eyes on the beauty. Here the ocean had crept under the dome of overhanging rock to reveal itself crowned with sapphires.
"Good morning, Mary," said a sweet voice. Trot jumped and looked around her in wonder. Did you hear that, Cap'n Bill?"
Cap'n Bill did not answer. He was staring, eyes bulging, at a place behind Trot's back, and he trembled a little. Trot turned half around, and she stared too. Rising from the blue water was a fair face, around which floated a mass of long, blonde hair. It was a sweet, girlish face, with eyes of the same deep blue as the water, and red lips whose dainty smile disclosed two rows of pearly teeth. The cheeks were plump and rosy, the brows gracefully penciled, while the chin was rounded and had a pretty dimple in it.
The most beautifulest in all the world," murmured Cap'n Bill in horror, "and no one has ever lived to tell the tale."
There was a peal of merry laughter at this that echoed and rippled throughout the cavern. Just at Trot's side appeared a new face, even fairer than the other, with a wealth of brown hair wreathing the lovely features, and the eyes smiled kindly into those of the child.
Are you a mermaid?" asked Trot, who was not a bit afraid, because they both seemed gentle and friendly.
"Yes, dear," was the soft answer.
"We are all mermaids," chimed a laughing chorus, as pretty faces appeared upon the surface of the water.
"Are you part fishes?" asked Trot, greatly pleased by this wonderful sight.
"No, we are all mermaid," replied the one with the brown hair. "The fishes are partly like us, and you are partly like us, Mary dear. But the mermaids lived before fishes and before humans, so both have borrowed something from us."
"Then you must be fairies if you've lived always," remarked Trot, nodding wisely.
"We are, dear. We are the water fairies," answered the one with the blonde hair, coming nearer and rising till her slender white throat showed plainly.
"We're goners, Trot," said Cap'n Bill, with a white, woebegone face.
"I guess not, Cap'n," she replied calmly. "These pretty mermaids aren't going to hurt us, I'm sure."
"No, indeed," said the first one who had spoken. "If we were wicked enough to wish to harm you, our magic could reach you as easily upon the land as in this cave. But we love little girls dearly and only wish to please them and make their lives more happy."
I believe that, cried Trot earnestly.
Cap'n Bill groaned.
We have appeared to you because we heard you say yesterday you'd like to see a mermaid, so we decided to grant your wish. Also, we heard all the foolish things Cap'n Bill said about us, and we wanted to prove to him they were wrong.
I only said what I've heard, protested Cap'n Bill.
Again the cave rang with laughter, and as it died away, Trot said, May I see your scales, please? And are they green and purple and pink like Cap'n Bill said? They seemed undecided what to say to this, and swam a little way off, where the beautiful heads formed a group that was delightful to see. Perhaps they talked together, for the brown-haired mermaid soon came back to the side of the boat and asked, Would you like to visit our kingdom and see all the wonders that exist below the sea? I'd like to, replied Trot promptly, but I couldn't. I'd get drowned.
That you would, mate, cried Cap'n Bill.
Oh, no, said the mermaid. We would make you both like one of ourselves, and then you could live within the water as easily as we do. I don't know as I'd like it, at least for always. You won't stay with us a moment longer than you please. Whenever you're ready to return home, we promise to bring you to this place and restore to you the same forms you are now wearing. Would I have a fish's tail? You would have a mermaid's tail, and you may choose the color yourself. Well, declared the little girl, we don't get such invitations every day, Cap'n, and if I don't go now, I may never find out how the mermaids live.
I just want 'em to let me live, said Cap'n Bill. No one ever saw a mermaid and lived to tell the tale, and if we dives down like they says, we won't live ourselves.
All the mermaids laughed at this, and the brown-haired one said, Well, if you are afraid, don't come. We merely thought it would please little Mary to see our beautiful home. I'd like to see 'em all right, said Trot, her eyes glistening with pleasure.
So would I, admitted Cap'n Bill, if we would live to tell the tale.
Don't you believe us? Are you afraid to trust us to bring you safely back?
No, said Cap'n Bill. Tain't that. I've got to look after Trot.
Then you'll have to come with me, said Trot, for I'm going to accept. And if you don't, Cap'n Bill, you go home and tell Mother I'm visiting the mermaids.
Oh, she'd scold me into shivers, moaned Cap'n Bill with a shudder. I guess I'd rather take my chances down below.
All right, I'm ready, Miss Mermaid, said Trot. Give me your hand, dear, replied the mermaid, lifting a lovely white arm from the water. Trot took the slender hand and found it warm and soft, and not a bit fishy. My name is Clea, continued the mermaid, and I am a princess in our deep sea kingdom. Just then Trot flopped right out of the boat into the water. Cap'n Bill caught a gleam of pink scales as his friend went overboard, and the next moment there was Trot's face in the water, among those of the mermaids. She was laughing with glee as she looked up into Cap'n Bill's face and called, Come on, Cap'n, it didn't hurt a bit. Cap'n Bill stood up in the boat as if undecided what to do. Never a sailor man was more bewildered. At first he couldn't believe it was true. But there was Trot in the water, laughing and floating, and he couldn't leave his little companion to make the trip to the depths of the ocean alone. Take my hand, please, Cap'n Bill, said Princess Clea, reaching her arm toward him. And the old man took courage and clasped her soft fingers. He had to lean over the boat to do it. And then there came a strange lightness to his legs, and he had a great longing to be in the water. So he flopped in beside Trot, where he found himself comfortable, but frightened.
"Law sakes, here's me in the water with my rheumatics.
You're wiggling all right now," observed Trot. "That's a fine tail you've got, Cap'n, and its green scales is just beautiful, green as emeralds."
"And this tail beats that old wooden leg all holler. I can do stunts now that I couldn't have done in 1,000 years with old Peg."
"Is Cap'n Bill a mermaid now?" asked Trot.
"Well, he's a merman, I suppose," laughed the pretty princess. "But when he gets home, he'll be just Cap'n Bill again."
"Wooden leg and all?"
"To be sure, my dear." The sailor was now trying his newly discovered powers of swimming, and was astonished he could dart this way and that with wonderful speed, and dive and caper about in the water, far better than he had ever been able to do on land, even before he got a wooden leg. And the water did not cling to him and wet him, as it always had done. He still wore his flannel shirt and pea jacket and his sailor cap. But although he was in the water and had been under the surface, the cloth still seemed dry and warm. Trot, too, was having strange experiences and enjoying them. When she ducked under the water, she saw plainly everything around her, as easily and distinctly as she had ever seen anything above. And by looking over her shoulder, she could watch the motion of her new tail, all covered with pretty iridescent pink scales, which gleamed like jewels. She noticed now that the mermaids were clothed too, and their exquisite gowns were the loveliest things. They seemed to be made of a material that was a sheeny silk, cut low in the neck, with wide flowing sleeves that seldom covered the shapely white arms of her new friends. The gowns had trains that floated far behind the mermaids as they swam, but were so fleecy and transparent that the sparkle of their scales might be seen reaching back of their waists, where the human form ended and the fish part began. The sea fairies wore strings of splendid pearls around their throats, while more pearls were sewn upon their gowns. They did not dress their beautiful hair at all, but let it float around them in clouds. The little girl had scarcely time to observe all this when one of the mermaids said, "Now, my dear, if you are ready, we will begin our journey, for it is a long way to our palaces."
"All right," answered Trot, and took the hand extended to her with a trusting smile.
"Will you allow me to guide you, Cap'n Bill?" asked the blonde mermaid, extending her hand to the old sailor.
"Of course, ma'am," he said,
taking her fingers rather bashfully.
"My name is Merla," she continued, "and I am cousin to Princess Clea. We must all keep together, you know, and I will hold your hand to help." They began to descend through the water, and it grew quite dark for a time, because the cave shut out the light. But soon Trot began to notice the water lighten and saw they were coming into brighter parts of the sea.
"We have left the cave now," said Clea, "and may swim straight home."
"I suppose there's no winding roads in the ocean," remarked the child, swimming swiftly beside her new friend.
"Oh, yes, indeed. At the bottom, the way is far from being straight or level," replied Clea. "But we are in midwater now, where nothing will hinder our journey unless..."
"Unless what?" asked Trot.
"Unless we meet with disagreeable creatures,
The midwater is not as safe as the very bottom. That's why we are holding your hands.
What good would that do? Asked Trot.
You must remember that we are fairies, said the princess. For that reason, nothing in the ocean can injure us. But you two are mortals, and therefore not entirely safe unless we protect you.
Suddenly, they swam right into a big school of fishes, all yellowtails and of very large size. There must have been hundreds of them. And when they saw the mermaids, they merely wiggled to one side and opened a path for the sea fairies to pass through.
Will they hurt us?
No, indeed, laughed the princess.
How about sharks?
Asked Cap'n Bill, who was swimming gracefully beside them, his hand clutched in that of Merla.
Never fear, said Merla. I'll take care of you on our journey.
Is there anything else to be afraid of in the sea? Asked the little girl.
One or two things, my dear, answered Princess Clea.
Of course, we mermaids have great powers, being fairies.
I know, said Trot.
How much farther do we have to go? Asked Cap'n Bill.
Well, how far do you think we've already come, Cap'n?
About 2 mile.
Well, we are now hundreds of miles from the cave where we started, the princess told him.
Then there's magic in it, announced Trot.
True, my dear. To avoid tiring you and to save time, we've used a little of our fairy power, said Clea. And we are now nearing our home. Let's go downward a bit, for you must know that the mermaid palaces are at the very bottom of the ocean, and in its deepest part.
And away they went. And with that, as these waves lull you to a deep and comfortable rest, I will wish you good night and sweet dreams.